Hi everybody, welcome to the United Stands. How you're doing, legends? It's the start of a new week. Manchester United won, but there's lots of news to get into. Ruben Amorim facing a transfer time crisis. Can he make it to January? Sir Jim Radcliffe, according to reports this morning, wants to give him the season. Ruben Amorim wants to get to January. He wants to bring a midfielder in. Can he make it there? That's the league table. Man United in 10th. We'll be talking about that. Also, a double huge injury boost involving Martinez and Mazraoui and their return dates. We will talk about that as well. We've also got, some reaction to what we were talking about last night. Very interesting reaction to what we were talking about last night as well. And a few other bits to get into too. And also just there from John Adams saying that Mike Keegan in the Daily Mail said this morning that the PGMOL have admitted that Nathan Collins should have been sent off for Brentford for pulling back Brian Mbeumo. I mean, look, it's the Brentford game. Do I want to be talking about the Brentford game? No, we were rubbish in that one. Talking of which, I've got a ridiculous stat for you, which I'm going to give you in a minute as well. But look, you know what? I said it at the time. That was a red card. Most of you agreed. Some people tried to fight against it, saying you can't have double jeopardy. Europa League against Athletic Club, was it Athletic Club or another Spanish club? They had a guy sent off for pulling Rasmus back from like a yard out from goal. So it was definitely a red card. And at that point, it was 2-1, was it? So I know Bruno misses the penalty, but you play half an hour against 10 men. We deserve to lose that game. Like we did deserve to lose that game, but it's a shocking decision. It's a wrong decision in a Premier League game. And whether it's Man United against Brentford or it's Chelsea against Liverpool, again, the officiating in this league, in this country, is abysmal. They don't even know what they're doing. Anyway, let's get into the show. So, look, this morning, let me give it you where it's coming from. It's coming from iNews that Sir Jim Radcliffe, iPaper, Manchester United co-owner Sir Jim Radcliffe believes boss Ruben Amorim is deserving of a full season in charge at Old Trafford. I always find it very interesting when this sort of stuff comes out after a win. The interesting stat I was going to give you, and I don't propose to go into this now, but I'm just going to drop it and come back to it. Manchester United have won just 5 matches in the Premier League in the last 8 months. And all of those wins have been against 10 men or against teams who've been promoted or relegated. 2-0 Sunderland promoted, 2-1 Chelsea 10 men, 3-2 Burnley promoted, 3-0 Leicester relegated, 3-2 Ipswich relegated. It ain't a good stat. It ain't a good stat. I mean, if you're Amorim out this morning, you can probably, you know, take your top off and spin it around your head saying, I told you so. It's a terrible stat that, you know, every game that we've won in the last 8 months has been against 10 men or promoted or relegated sides. It needs to improve. It needs to improve. Kahu says, Mark, 10 points is okay. The league table's there for a reason. We'll come back to that in a moment. But the question is, if Sir Jim Radcliffe is wanting to give Ruben Amorim the season, why did he not say this last week when it was after a Brentford game? It's typical positivity spin to pull it out there after a good result. And I ain't got a problem with it. But the question is, can he survive this season? That is my question around that. Somebody just said, what about Man City? Last 8 months, we beat Man City in December. So that was 10 months ago. So there we go. Aston Villa at home. Aston Villa at home, Phil. You're right. Well, the stat's wrong. Well done, Phil. Give yourself a pat on the back. We did beat Aston Villa, definitely, and that was at the end of the season. So that stat's wrong. This is why I hate stats. Phil, you are a legend of the chat. You're a double legend of the chat. Absolutely spot on. But look, goalkeeper was sent off. Yeah, 10 men. Shit. That's right, isn't it? Yeah, goalkeeper got sent off. Phil, you're an idiot. Phil, you've gone from hero to zero, you absolute tosser. No, I'm only joking. Goalkeeper was sent off. Look, the question is, I want to talk about the injury boost with Martinez and Mazraoui, but I also want to talk about this. It's the international break. I'm expecting a couple of stories to break, certainly one, as I mentioned last night. But I think, looking at the league table as it stands, 10 points from 10 games, that means if we continue on that trajectory, we'll get 38 points. 10 points from 7 games. You're a fucking idiot. I'm looking at 10th and 10. Idiot. 10 points in 10th place. 10 points from 7 games means that we're trajecting around 45 to 50 points. So that's got to improve. What's the average? 10 divided by 7? I don't know, 1 point something. But the question is, can Amorim survive? He needs a midfielder. He knows that. The next opportunity is the January transfer window. So he's got a bit of a time crisis as to whether he can actually do that. Now, the reason I brought that stat in about we only beat 10 men or newly promoted or relegated sides is that we ain't playing any of them lot for quite a while now, unless people keep getting players sent off. The question this morning is, can Amorim make it to January and will the club back him? So Jim Ratcliffe wants to give him the season. He'll get players next summer, but can you make it through a full season? He's got to make it. And I want him to make it. He's got to make it till January and then the club have got to spend. The reason we're talking about this morning is that Sir Jim, you know, Ruben Amorim wanted players in the summer that he didn't get. He didn't get the midfielder. He didn't get the right wing back. He's going to want them the minute it hits January the 1st. Are the club going to deliver those? And is Ruben Amorim going to make it there? They're the two questions. We've not been particularly good in the January transfer window in recent years. I don't see Ruben Amorim getting through the whole season with this squad. I don't. I think you've got to try and battle your way to January and then you've got to give him the players for the second half of the season. Now, I know it's Adam Wharton on the thumbnail and we all know Adam Wharton's probably going to leave Crystal Palace in the summer, but I don't see him going in January. Belaba, we spoke about last night, is probably the player that we might go back in for, but is he good enough? Has he got the right minerals? There's two big questions there. And look, it's great to be here on a Monday morning in a sense of positivity, but it's a battle won. It's not the war. And he desperately does need more than what he's got. I look at that Man United side. I think it's exactly where it should be. I think we're better than Sunderland. So, the reason I've got the league table there is I'm looking at it and I'm going, by Christmas, will he still be on that page or will he be on page two? You tell me. I look at that and I go, well, the problem is behind him, Newcastle, Aston Villa, I think they could move ahead of us. Sunderland, we should be moving past. Everton, we should be moving past. So, you know, if Villa and Newcastle come through and we move past Sunderland and Everton, we could still be in 10th or maybe 8th. Can we take out Bournemouth? I don't know. Can we take out Crystal Palace? I don't know. I certainly don't think we're going to take out Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham, Man City, Chelsea. And this is the thing. You know, I projected at the start of the season, we'd be somewhere between 5th and 10th. I'm still projecting that. And I think that if the club aren't looking at January the 1st to try and give him stuff, I don't think he can make it till May with what he's got. I really don't. I'm not laughing, by the way. I've got a tickly throat. Give me your thoughts on that. Andreas says, don't come here with your facts, Phil, and statistics without deeper substance. We're fragile, broken United fans. Hashtag make Phil great again. And if Bruno knew how to score a penalty, we'd be second, says Josh. And John United says, what are the chances Ineos give him 3 or 4 players in January? One player isn't enough to fix the team's issue. Remember, Jim said top four. Mark, the FA Cup is important, says Kahu, and that is in January. But look, just to tell you what our fixtures are between now and January, you can make your own mind up. Liverpool away, Brighton at home, Forest away, Spurs away, Everton at home, Palace away. I mean, I don't like it that in our next 6 games, we've got 4 away. I read something last night. I'll tell you what it was. It was actually through a football. It wasn't a book. It was The Beach by Alex Garland. It's a very good book, escapism and, you know, chasing the perfect life. No, it wasn't. It was, I read this tweet last night and it went, if you're Amorim in, you're in for a crap Christmas. And it listed these games in the league. And it was Liverpool away, Brighton at home, Forest away, Spurs away, Everton at home, Palace away. 4 of our next 6 Premier League games are away. And they didn't say anything more than that. They didn't need to. I think the thought process behind it was, we've got 4 of our next 6 Premier League games away. We could easily lose 3 of the next 6. If he loses 3 of the next 6, he's lost 6 in the first, what would it be? I'm trying to do the maths. 6 in his first 13 games. You know, it's not looking good. And the problem with some of these losses is, if he loses three of his next six games, the only one in there that you would accept is Liverpool. Like, you're not going to accept losing to Forest, Spurs, Everton, Palace, Brighton. So they are difficult. Anyway, after those, into December, if he makes it through that, West Ham at home, Wolves away. You'd fancy those. Bournemouth at home, Villa away, Newcastle at home, Wolves away. So December's not too bad. If he can make it through the next six, if he makes it to the end of November, I think he makes it to January. I genuinely think December's a good month. You've got four games at home, two away, and the home games, you've got Wolves, you've got West Ham, you've got Bournemouth, your away games, you've got Wolves, Villa and Newcastle, you never know, and we've got Newcastle at home. So it's a tough run, but I think he's got to get through the next six. And if he gets through those, I think he makes it to January, and then we're in the hands of the owners. And if Sir Jim Ratcliffe's just sitting there going, oh, at the end of the day, we'll give him till the end of the season, I want you to get your hands in your fucking pocket and give him some money in January. That's absolutely what needs to happen. Absolutely no doubt about it. Because if it doesn't, I think it becomes a bit of a struggle, doesn't it? But we ain't out of the woods. We're not out of the woods. He's not out of the woods at all. The scrutiny is needed, and absolutely. Just actually, before we talk about this injury news as well, brilliant video last night. Absolutely loved it. Sam C, who used to work with us and still a big friend of the channel, he messaged me and said, I loved the show last night, and he never does that. So it was obviously a very good show. And it was a brilliant show last night. But literally, I can't believe the reaction last night. So Gary Neville comes out and says, if you can't deal with criticism from pundits, you're at the wrong club. Blame shifters, excuses, you know, deflecting the blame. These are not the right people to have at the club. It's worrying. I thought it was absolutely spot on. And I don't think it was anti-Amrim, because I think Amrim saying it publicly, he's basically saying the same thing. You wake up this morning, you look at some of the reaction, you've got people saying, Neville slams Amrim, trying to turn it into Neville against Amrim. And it pisses me off, because that's not what it was. It was Ruben Amrim saying that these players get impacted by negativity. And it was Gary Neville saying they shouldn't be impacted by negativity. They're technically on the same side. They're both right. It's the players who are the issue. So why are people turning it into Amrim versus Neville? On top of that, I also read people going, I said, match of the day, back in 1995, when Alan Hansen said you can't win it with kids, was bigger in football than social media. And people were like, oh my God, man said match of the day is bigger than Twitter. Right, 1995 was 30 years ago. If you're saying man said, you're definitely not over 40. So you were up your mum's chuff anyway. So you're talking about something you've got no idea about. But on top of that, it was a different type of criticism back then. There was no social media. So the only criticism you could take was from the press and from TV. And that was impactive. Of course it was. Of course they weren't on Match of the Day giving you death threats or being racist. And in the newspapers, they were quite harsh, but they weren't, you know, calling you a wanker or stuff like that. So of course, social media can be worse in relation to its abuse. But pundits aren't doing that either. Pundits aren't going, you know, saying anything different to what was being said on Match of the Day. And that's my point. I can't believe we've got people in our fan base who are criticising Gary Neville for criticising our players and defending our players because apparently it's harder now than it was in the 90s, when most of you weren't even fucking alive in the 90s. David Beckham got sent off in 1998. Every ground he went to for 9 months, he got abuse about his wife. He got booed. People were putting pictures of him with darts in them. Somebody made a mannequin and hung it from a bridge. Now, if somebody dad did that in 2025, there'd be an uproar. The Prime Minister would be sending a squad round, arresting people and confiscating their phones. So let's not pretend that we live in 2025 and everything's really difficult now. And in 1995, we were all walking around with bloody lollipops and holding hands. It was, the manager of England was on the front page of the paper with half of his head a turnip. They were basically calling him turnip head. So abuse then was bad. And abuse now is bad. What Gary Neville is basically saying is, if you can't deal with it, you shouldn't be at Man United. In 1995 or 2025, if you can't deal with it, you shouldn't be at Manchester United. If someone's calling you a shit load of wanker knobhead twat on X,
Don't fucking be on X. That's the point. What are you reading it for? If somebody's writing, saying stuff about you, don't fucking read it. Switch it off, switch on, and prove them wrong. Switch it off, switch on, and prove them wrong. It even starts to rhyme. Switch off, switch on, and prove them wrong. It's easy. Stick it on the walls at Carrington. Switch off, switch on, and prove them wrong. And that's what he's saying. It's not a, I can't believe the amount of people who were on social media last night going, wow, Neville's an idiot because it's a lot harder these days. You know, and you think the irony of you calling Gary Neville an idiot on social media, defending social media, it's just mad. But the point remains, if you have a mentality as a Man United player that you're impacted by external criticism, you're at the wrong club. It's not an argument about whether criticism is worse now or was worse then. I lived it then. It was horrible then. I mean, Eric Cantona gets sent off. Someone walks down 10 steps and starts, you know, saying horrible things about his kids and his wife. So don't pretend that 2025 is worse than 1995. It was just a bit technology's a little bit different. It was bad then. It's bad now. In fact, it was worse then. If you go 10 years further back, people were chucking bananas at black players. So, you know, there is a lot that was bad back then. I admit social media is bad now. But defending the players and saying, oh, Neville's wrong, it's really difficult now. They shouldn't be on bloody social media. They shouldn't be listening to social media. You're a professional footballer. You're a professional footballer. You're not a Man United fan. You're a professional footballer paid ridiculous money. Ridiculous money. How's about doing your job? Just focus on your bloody job. If that impacts you, ignore it. Focus on your job. Prove them wrong. It's as simple as that. And it's not, you know, I don't want to get into a debate about whether it was worse in the 90s or worse now. The reality is what Gary Neville was saying and what Ruben Amorim's actually saying is these players should not be being impacted by external noise. If they're on their phones too much, and we had a certain player who was on his phone all the fucking time. He's not here now, all the time. And I'm not talking about Rashford, Villa kit. I'm still not talking about Rashford. Wore a Villa kit on holiday. They're on their phones too much. They're on their phones too much. Need to get off it. If you're a professional footballer, the clue is in professional. Simple as that. Ray Carl Brown Amori says, for me, Amorim just has to win games. This is going to decide our faith and the players, and Amorim's got a chance to make it happen. Ray, going back to what we were saying about their time crisis, can he make it to January? Will they give him players? You're absolutely spot on. He's got to get through those games. And if you've tuned in a little bit late, the next six games are key. You've got four away games. You've got two home games. Liverpool away, Brighton at home, Forest away, Spurs away, Everton at home, Palace away. They're the sort of games that cause you problems if you lose them. Add into that, Man United have only won games in the last 8 months against 10 men or relegated or promoted sides. That's got to change because Brighton are not promoted or relegated. Everton are not promoted or relegated. Liverpool are not promoted or relegated. Forest are not promoted or relegated. Everton are not promoted or relegated. And Palace are not promoted or relegated. So that run has to change. If we, in the last 8 months in the Premier League, if we've only beaten teams that are promoted or relegated or down to 10 men, unless we play the next six games and everyone gets a man sent off, the statistics suggest we're not going to win many games. That needs to change. And Ray is spot on. And their end of the lesson, it weaves in. Luke's gifted one membership. You're an absolute legend, Luke. Thank you very much for that. Voice of reason, Patrick Lynch. Sir Jim Radcliffe can want to give Amorim the season, but we all know that the next loss to a team is unacceptable and the noise from the media and the sections of the fans will be deafening. Does Ineos have the strength to withstand that? No. No. And you are the voice of reason so often, Patrick, and you're absolutely spot on. There will be people in this live chat. There will be people watching. There will be people who are going to watch it later who are Amorim out. Unless he can perform a miracle, Amorim out. And they will be Amorim out right now. They'll want change right now. Some of us don't want change. We want him to be the guy. But I'll tell you what, last week after Brentford,
there were times, well, I was live with you a lot. There was times where I just kept saying, I don't know what I want. I don't know what I want. I really don't. I'm not firmly behind Amrim and I don't want him to get sacked. But I can't sit here and say he's the guy. And I can't sit here and say there's a guy out there to replace him. So last week, we're in a bad, bad place. And if we'd lost to Sunderland, we'd be in a horrific place this morning. So that, what does that say to me? Fine margins. One win helps him. One loss, we'll be back there again. He, as Ray says, and as Patrick says, he's got to keep winning. He has to keep winning. And if he doesn't keep winning, Ineos can say all they like about wanting to back him for the whole season. But owners become irrelevant when the noise becomes too loud. And as Patrick says, if that noise becomes deafening, it doesn't matter what your intention is. He won't survive. There is zero per chance that the board signed top midfielder in January, says Dazzo. I mean, it's a great point, Dazzo, because I think if he makes it through all those games we've just said, and if on January the 1st, that league table has him in, say, 7th, he's in an okay position. But 7th can become 12th by the end of the season. 7th can become 5th by the end of the season. If Amrim has got us somewhere around 7th on January the 1st and the club go, everything's fine, let's leave it, that's a fucking disgrace. I mean, whatever happens, let's put it this way. Whatever happens on January the 1st, there should be a wodge of money on the table to go and buy a midfielder. Whoever the manager is, whether it's Glasner, Southgate, Amrim, Xavi, whoever, we should be ready to spend on January the 1st. But Dazzo makes a great point. Do you think this club will? There is no scenario where we don't buy a midfielder in January if you're a logical Man United fan. Of course, Dazzo's right. There is a logical scenario where they don't do it because they don't like doing it. But that's a failure in a footballing sense. And we always come back to this. And we should, you know, some people are saying, we've won a game, leave Amrim alone. The club's in an absolute shithole, mate. I like the fact that we're maybe not talking about Amrim out, but we should talk about the board. I felt we should have been talking about the board last week, but it was all about Amrim. Amrim's won a game. Maybe we should be deflecting on the board a little bit. Like, what is the plan for January? What is the plan for this football club? Every team above us is focused on football. Arsenal, football. Liverpool, football. Tottenham now, football. Bournemouth, football. Man City, football. Crystal Palace, football. They want to be as good as they can be on the football pitch. I feel that Man United fail on that all the time. Seth says, knowing United, it will take a minimum a week to get a player, then letting him settle means it will get to February. 4 months, we need to wait to see good teams, says Seth. Gender says, when January comes, which I think is a film, no, that's when Saturday comes, Bruno should be sold and get Wharton. Our midfield should Maynou and Wharton. United has always been about young English players. No one talks about how we had Kenda top of our list before Chelsea got him. Chase Belaba for a month, got rejected and still signed no defender or right wing back. Tell you what, there's some bloody good comments coming in today because Raz is right. We were looking for Kenda at right wing back and we didn't buy a right wing back. Jake M says, did you see Redknapp on Sky? Maybe if Ineos threaten legal action to these pundits, we won't have to hear their awful takes anymore. Might even get apologies. Oh, Jake. We're all there going, Jake, tell us more. Like, what did he say? Because that sounds like something we need to discuss. John United says, what are the chances Ineos give him 3 or 4 players in January? One player alone isn't enough to fix the team's issue. Remember, Sir Jim said top 4. Mason Mount said top 4 on Saturday. I mean, I'd love to know what they're drinking at Carrington. I know it's all been redone, but they must put something in the pipes. Stuart's just gifted a membership as well. Let's talk injuries. There are some more comments coming in about stuff that I want to go back to, but I want to talk about the injuries. Before I can do that, though, I've got to say a massive shout out to Sarah, who sent us a brilliant picture. But this was the message she said. I'm not sure you'll ever see this, but I figured I would send it you anyway. My daughter is 11 months, and since she was born, I would listen to your videos and they used to lull her to sleep. Now she sits and is in awe every time. Thank you for the best content every day, Sarah. Now, look. I mean, you know, the United Stand is many things to many people. And she has sent a little picture of her daughter sat in front of a screen watching the United Stand. So, I mean, look,
we have people who put messages in about how this community helps them with mental health and all sorts. We've had very, very serious messages. We lose people along the way. People tell us about them and their partners, being pregnant and then when they're born and stuff. It's great that we have such an amazing community. And, big shout out to Sarah and her daughter. I suppose it's funny in a way that there's been times where it's actually put her to sleep. I think sometimes watching a Man United watch along, I can relate to that. But thank you, Brad, for the lovely message and for being part of the community this morning, if you're watching. Right. Let me talk to you about an injury boost. So this came in this morning and it's from. Let me just get the source right on this. Standard Sport are saying that Ruben Amorim hopes to have Lisandro Martinez and Mazraoui back after the international break. Now, we've always been very good on injury updates because of our source at the club who has given us some good transfer stuff as well. What we know on injuries, like the last update we had on injuries was in the last international break. And at that time, Cunha and Mount were out. We were told that they wouldn't be back for Man City or Chelsea. Even though some people were saying they were going to be back for Man City, neither of them were back for Man City. I think if I'm correct, they were back for the Chelsea game. With Mazraoui, he could be back for the Liverpool game. Considering he's already, I think he's on to his second injury of the season now, maybe his third. They're hopeful that he'll be back for the Liverpool game. With Martinez, there is this. I mean, I had my Martinez jumper on at the weekend, didn't I? The butcher. Pat, 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 pat. I'm desperate for Martinez to be back. Nobody wants Martinez back more than me. Some of you want him to go in the midfield. I just want him to bench Luke Shaw. I don't think Luke Shaw's had a very good season. I think Martinez fits. He's on a different level to Luke Shaw. I also think he knows how to step into the midfield very well. I mean, Martinez was stepping into the midfield when we played a back four. People forget that. I remember when we did the interview with Rasmus and Martinez had been injured and he said, we're really looking forward to having him back because he's really good at stepping into the midfield and playing the ball through to the forwards. He was doing that in a back four. So, sneeze incoming. So, if he can step into a midfield in a back four, imagine what he can do in a back five. So I think Martinez is going to be revolutionary for Manchester United and Amorim's system if he can stay fit. Of course, in the time that Amorim's been at Manchester United, Martinez has barely been available. So I'm very, very excited to have him back. Although, what I must say this morning is that the update is not as exciting as some people want it to be. Him being involved in the Liverpool game is described by our source as very optimistic. Martinez has been on tour in July. He has been training for quite a while, but on the grass, rehabilitation, the training in relation to with his teammates, that hasn't been happening. And even when that does happen, it's such a long injury. The minute he makes the bench, he might not be ready to start games for another month. That's what I was told, because they've got to take it steady with him. And also, match fitness, match sharpness could take weeks. So we're not in a position where Lisandro Martinez is going to start against Liverpool, basically. Who knows how quick he can get back, but there is a long road to recovery in relation to match fitness and his reaction to high-end physical intense football. The main problem at Man United, or sorry, the main concern at Manchester United with Martinez is he's had two separate major injuries in the last 2 years. He's now sort of 27. I think he's 27. He might be 28 now. If he has another injury, you're basically in the category of Phil Jones, He's a busted flush. So they want him back, but Amorim's a big fan of Luke Shaw, so there's not a real rush to get him back. And he is not going to be back playing anytime soon. Personally, I don't think we'll see him starting a game until after the November international break. That's what I was always being told to prepare for. So Martinez back after the international break, technically, I think could be true. Maybe he'll get a few minutes. Maybe he'll be on the bench a few times. But I don't think we're going to see him starting a game anytime soon. So again, we're going to have to get through these next four games, which incredibly to me is three away games. And I don't know why we're in that position, actually. Arsenal at home. Burnley at home. Chelsea at home. Sunderland at home. We've had four home games and three away games. Fulham, Man City, Brentford. So we've had four home games and three away games. But now we've got three away games and one home game. That's imbalanced. That is imbalanced, isn't it? So in our first 10 games, we're going to have... Oh, I can't do this. In our first 11 games, we're going to have seven... No, that can't be right. I'm trying to think. We've played seven games. We've got four more games before the next international break. We're going to play three away games there. It'll be 6 and 5, won't it? Yeah, it will be 6 and 5. I suppose it's got to do that, hasn't it? I'm trying to figure it out. But yeah, with Martinez, I don't necessarily think we're going to see him back playing anytime soon. Would have been good to have Heaven against Sunderland, says Maliki. Yeah, but Amrim likes Luke Shaw, doesn't he? He likes Luke Shaw. Marlow says, should the fact that all the players Amrim wanted to bring with him for Sporting rejected the move, maybe he and his system wasn't as big a favourite among the Sporting players as reported, says Marlow. Well, yeah, we only went for two players. We went for Jokeres, who you can say, I mean, it's a good point, Marlow. We went for Jokeres, who chose Arsenal because they're a better club and they're in the Champions League and they're trying to win the Premier League. So I don't blame Jokeres going for Arsenal. He might have absolutely loved Amrim. And he might have really liked Man United, but Arsenal's a far better choice. Kenda, Chelsea, I don't really get that. Kenda's a kid, teenager. Amrim's given him the breakthrough. You'd think he'd want to come to Man United. He chooses Chelsea. So I don't know about that one. But we only went for two. It's not like Ljungberg, Nacho, Gonçalves, you know, Trincao. It's not like all those players rejected us. We went for two, and you can understand why we got rejected. I would imagine Chelsea beat us to Kenda because of the financial offer as well. I would imagine Man United were dithering, as we always do. And Chelsea probably went in and said, you can stay where you are for another year, which Sporting would like. We'll give you a longer contract, which the agent and the player will like. I'd imagine it came down to financials. Mick Red says, Sesko better than Jokeres. I mean, mate, is it not school time? It's 10:30. Shouldn't you be at school? I mean... I know some people might like that sort of comment. I find it really embarrassing and childish. I mean, what does it, you know, Sesko is better than Jokeres. My dad's tougher than your dad. What does it matter? The reality is, well, I'm very happy with Sesko. I'm very happy with Lemens. But let's not pretend that Sesko was even in our top three striker targets. Let's not pretend we didn't sign Lemens until the final day of the transfer window. If these players end up being good, and I hope they do, it's not by design, is it? We didn't sit there at the start of the summer and say, Sesko's the priority, he's better than Jokeres, he's better than Delap, he's better than Ekitike, he's better than Osimhen. We landed on Sesko because we couldn't get four or five other strikers. And with Lemens, we bought him on the last day. So I hope Sesko does end up being better than Jokeres, but let's not pretend we planned it. We didn't. We've fallen into Sesko. And I think we've fallen into a good player. We've fallen into Lemens, and I think we've fallen into a good player. But the credit will go to Lemens and Sesko. It won't go to Man United's recruitment team because they were not designed signings. They were desperate at the end of the day. But we can celebrate them as fans. I'm very happy with Sesko, and I'm very happy with Lemens. And as I said last night, I think it's great the amount of positivity and the amount people want to talk about them. But you know, I'm not being negative. The summer transfer window was shit. In my opinion, the summer transfer window was shit. We went for five other strikers before Sesko, and he didn't get a pre-season because of it. We didn't buy Lemens until the end of the season, the last day of the window, which is amazing. When you watch Lemens at the weekend and you see what... I mean, the applause goes to you.
the praise and applause goes to you. Everybody said Binder and Onana are a problem, and Man United didn't solve that problem. We got locked out of the Carabao Cup. We lost to Arsenal. And then we bring a goalkeeper in on the last day of the transfer window who's not ready to play until Sunderland game 7. That should have been a priority from the first day of the transfer window in June. We haven't started Lemens until game week 7, and we only bought him on the last day of the window. That's bloody embarrassing. And the praise goes to you and the player, because we saw at the weekend what it means to have a goalkeeper that is stable, confident, and gives off confidence to everybody else. Why are Man United not figuring that out at the start of the window? Why are we, you know, scrambling around on the last day of the window? Sesko looks very good as well. I think he'll get better. Why was he not bought in June? Why were we buying him at the end of, was it July? Why was he fifth choice? So where's the midfielder? Where's the right wing back? I know we're going backwards and we need to look forwards, but this, it actually fits in. January the 1st, we need to hit it, because we didn't hit this window on June the 1st. We fucked up. That window, that transfer window was a joke. It was a 5 out of 10 at best. Look at the fixtures. Look at the league table. We ain't climbing that league table much with what we've got. If you're in charge of that football club, you need to be lining up deals for January now, because we ain't equipped the way we should be. And I personally think it's great that Amrin won on Saturday, because the negativity should still be around. 10th place is not good enough for Man United. 15th place is not good enough for Man United. There's huge holes in that team. And most of it goes back to a terrible summer transfer window where they messed up. And there should be absolute obsession with January. And if they're just going to sat there and go, well, please, Amrin, get results. Well, the reason he's not getting results is partly down to the fact that you haven't given him the ingredients. Last season, we managed 4 points from our next 6 games, says Andy Atherton. What? Forest away, Brighton at home, Liverpool away. 6 games? 6? Bloody hell. Well, how many points do I think we'll get from Liverpool away, Brighton at home, Forest away, Palace away, Spurs away, Everton at home? I think we'll get a point at Anfield. I think we'll beat Brighton. I think we'll get a point at Forest, so that's 5. I think Spurs will beat us. I think we'll beat Everton, that's 8. I think we'll get a point at Palace, that's 9. So that's 9 from 18. Which probably puts us around 10th, 9th or 8th again in 6 games' time. Is 9 points from 18 good? I mean, I've got 4 away games there. It's mid-table form, isn't it? 9 from 18. Forest aren't that good, but I don't think Ange will be there. I was looking at their next 3 games. They've got Chelsea, Porto and Bournemouth. He'll get sacked after Bournemouth, and the new manager's first game will be dun-dun-dun. I think we're literally going to be the new manager's first game. That's why I think it might be a point. If we're playing against Angers Forest, we'll win. But if it's the new manager, yeah. Trev says Spurs won't beat us. I mean, have you not looked at the league table, mate? Like, what gives you so much confidence? But you're going to get division there, because some people think we're back. Some people think we're shit. I'm just realistic. I'd say if somebody said, how many points do you think you're going to get from the next 30? I'd say 15. How many from the next 60? 30. How many from the next 90? 45. How many from the next 9? Bastards. 5. It's not quite half. I'd just go half. Because that's where I am at the moment. I'm just sort of like ridiculous. I'm like this. I don't know which way the scales are going. So I'm just sort of like balanced. My wife says I treat marriage like football. Lots of strategy, occasional tackles, and way too much focus on the backfield. Andreas, it's too early for that. Ghost 92 says, if we don't go for Wharton in January, Liverpool will get him in the summer. We need to push in January to prevent competition in the summer. I don't think we'll get anywhere near Wharton. And to be honest with you, if I had a choice, and I want to run a poll on this one actually as well. I think it's interesting. I'm gonna throw up 3. Oh no, I'll do 2. It's fair.
If you had a choice between Belieber and Wharton, and Uncle Goldbridge can deliver it now, I'm going to pull a few strings and I'm going to get you one of these players on January the 1st. Who would you go for? Stuart's gifted a membership. You're a legend. Savish says these social media critiques would go soft when actually confronting players in person, whereas in the 90s, fans wouldn't mind punching them in the face. Exactly. And you've got to use that. If you're a player, like, social media is just so easy to type something. Faceless accounts, most of them as well. I hope we somehow sign Grimaldo in January. Says Cap. I think he's a bit old for United's profile. He's about 29, isn't he? Mark, I agree with Gary. These players should not be here if they can't take it. If you put yourself in public view, be ready for criticism and brush it off and move forward. That's what winners do, says Martin Saunders. Thanks for your super chat, Martin, this morning. Luke's gifted a membership. Thank you very much for that. Appreciate that as well. I think I've just caught up on those. So interestingly enough, 60% of you would go with Wharton and 40% of you would go with Belieber. I'd go Wharton. I don't think there's much in age, is there? Wharton is 21. He'll be 22 in February. And Belieber is 21. He'll be 22 in January. So they're basically the same age. Brighton, Crystal Palace. You say tomato, I say tomato. So I don't see any difference in profile, age, or club. What I do see a difference is mentality. I think Wharton reminds me of a Declan Rice type midfielder in the sense that he has a ridiculous consistency. He's really, 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 consistent and focused. He looks to me like he's got the right mentality. I think Wharton's going to end up at Liverpool or Arsenal or Man City and do really, really well. So I would go for Wharton. I just think at this moment in time, he's more impressive in his consistency. I also think he's more of a sitter in a two. I think he's more of a sitter. I know why Amrin wants Belieber, because he wants his sitters to press forward and be energetic going forward. And Belieber is better at that. He's also better at carrying the ball. I don't mean in a rugby sense. I mean, like, he can get the ball and run with it. They're different profiles. But I am genuinely, like, I think Belieber's a better footballer than Wharton, if you like, more attacking. But I think Wharton's more disciplined, and I think mentality's big, and based on the last 6 months, I think Wharton's mentality shines out more than Belieber's. I don't agree that Belieber needs to be playing as badly as he does for Brighton because he didn't get a transfer in the summer. I think it's concerning to me. Light switch players. I don't think Man United need players that can switch it on and off based on what's going on off field. And we've just spent a few minutes and last night talking about, you know, United players being impacted by what goes off the pitch and how they shouldn't be at Man United. Is this not a potential hazard that this is a player that gets impacted by stuff that's not happening on the pitch? And that worries me. You know, I remember Roy Keane years ago was basically leaving Man United. I'd say it was 2000. Maybe it was after the treble. His contract was running down. He was going to go to Juventus. We all knew it. And then he ended up signing a new contract around Christmas time to stay at Man United. It used to happen a bit with Giggs and Scholes with Inter Milan. Like, Italian clubs were really after our players because in the late 90s, early noughties, the Italian league was the best league in the world. But with Keane, his contract was running down and it nearly happened. And he still kept playing really well. He still kept playing really, really well. So I think that it worries me that players, it worries me when performances dip off the field things. And we've got enough of those players at Man United. Solely based on paper, where would you say we belong in the Premier League, says Class of 99? I mean, I think the league table's weird because I think
we should be above Sunderland. Sunderland are the worst team we've played, and we deserve to beat them. Everton, I don't know about whether we deserve to be better than Everton. Maybe the same. Chelsea, we beat Chelsea, because so you could say we could be above them, but they did have 10 men for a bit. Palace, I think we'd struggle against Palace. I think they're well organised. Man City have beat us. Bournemouth, I think, would beat us. Tottenham, I think, would beat us. Liverpool and Arsenal are better than us. Are Newcastle better than us? They're behind us at the moment. Are Aston Villa better than us? I think we're around. I think we're somewhere between. I think if I was being generous, the highest I would put us is eighth. If I was being negative, the lowest I'd put us is 12th. So I think that's where we are at the moment, somewhere between 8th and 12th. I want us to be somewhere between 5th and 8th. That's where I want us to be. And I think we can get there. You know, as somebody said before, if Bruno scores his two penalties, we probably are 5th or 6th. So I think where we are right now, based on the start of the season, we're somewhere between 8th and 12th. So 10th is perfect. Where we need to be is somewhere between 5th and 8th. Hi, Mark. I'm moving from England to Malta to sign a pro contract for a club in Malta. 19 years of age. Hope one day you call me a prat scoring against United. Good luck with that, James. Fair play. Malta's a lovely place as well. So fair play. Good luck. Keep watching. Tell us about your story. Robert McCormack says Wharton is a footballer and Belabor is hype. You don't want Robert McCormack on your case, Belabor. Stay away from Man United. Solely, the people think I'm bad. If he likes you, you're on his wall. If he doesn't like you, he won't forget. Should we look at two centre midfield loans in January, says Keel Robinson. Look, I'll give you one name. One name we were linked to in the summer that I genuinely think we should go. And people aren't going to listen to me because we've got the Bundesliga deal. But having that Bundesliga deal, I know a lot more about Bundesliga players than I did before we got it. I'm watching it loads. I do the highlights show. We do a game every Friday. You know, I'm watching more games. There's a lot of good players there. Stiller is like a very good player. I've watched about 3 90-minute games of him now. They had a bit of a slow start to the season. I think they had to adjust to not having Walter Mader. They won again at the weekend. Difficult game away. They're a good side. And Stiller is a good player. And again, a little bit like Wharton, I think he's got the right mentality. And also, very tenacious in the tackle. Very disciplined in his positional sense. But he can take a free kick. He can take a penalty. He can score a goal. And in an Amrim system where you've got license to push forward in the midfield too, I think he'd be very good. I don't know whether we're going to go in there, but somebody will. I can see him at Madrid. I can see him at Real Madrid easily. I could see him at Barcelona. I could see him at PSG. If those links were true in the summer, and I don't know whether they were, we should be looking at him. I think he'd be very good. Nusser's very good, Cheese, but he's not a midfielder. He's a winger. Good result for Leipzig at Dortmund to get a draw. I think Lemens is huge and will save us points. Absolutely agree, Ian. If you've got a goalkeeper that's competent, we saw it with David De Gea. Look, maybe for some people it's been a long time, but the reason the buzz around Lemens is real is because many of us remember when we were shit, like 2014, 15, 16, David De Gea was our best player every year. And there were games that we would have lost and he made them be draws or wins. So for the last 2 years, we've had goalkeepers that are crap. If we get a goalkeeper that's decent, we will move up that league table. David De Gea, there was one season in particular where I can't remember where we finished under Van Gaal. But if Onana had been in goal, we'd have been in the bottom four. There was one season in particular where De Gea was just ridiculous. I mean, can't you remember that game at Arsenal at the Emirates when we should have lost about six. We should have lost by about six and we won. And I'm not joking. Like after the game, people were saying United were lucky. And I did the match reaction. They said, how can you be lucky when you pay the money for a good goalkeeper?
It's not luck when your goalkeeper makes save after save after save. I understand it. If you're Arsenal, you should have been finishing the chances, but David De Gea was absolutely brilliant. So I think that 100%, if Lemens ends up being anywhere near what we had with De Gea, we will move up the table because of the goalkeeper. It's a very important position. We'll play more confidently. The defence will be more confident. The team will be more confident. He will save more shots. He will collect more crosses. He will instill confidence. So it's very exciting. It's very exciting if it works out because, look, he's not going to be the Iron Dome. You know, that's not going to happen. He's not going to be impenetrable. Donnarumma concedes goals. Alisson concedes goals. You're going to concede goals, but you're not going to concede as many. And the team will be better for it. And look, yeah, there shouldn't be any chuff monsters on this. Everybody should remember what we were like with De Gea in goal. Like, he was worth 10 points a season. Easily. And at the other end, a striker that puts the ball in the back of the net should also be worth 10 points. So, you know, we what did we get last year? 42 points? We should be looking at an easy 20-point swing if we can score more goals and concede less. But look, the big problem we've got there, goal difference. Apart from Sunderland, we're the only club in negative equity. And this has been going on for a long time. We've got to solve that. We've got to solve our goal difference because goal difference is worth an extra point. And we've been crap on goal difference for years. Got to start pumping teams. I don't agree with this criticism on Saturday, but somebody said to be a decent team, you turn that Sunderland game from 2-0 to 4-0. I think that's asking to run before you can walk. That does need to happen, but I'm not going to criticise the team for that. Ultimately, it's about winning, certainly. Would have been good to see Heaven against Sunderland, says Malachi. Why fan base hate British players, says Chris. I don't think the fan base hate British players. I mean, Maynou, we're all demanding that he starts. We don't actually have that many British players. Look, Harry Maguire is well liked. There's just no future in it, and he's limited with pace. Luke Shaw was a player everybody liked. He chose England over Man United, and he's not playing particularly well. Maynou, everybody wants him in the team. Who else is a British player in the England? Mason Mount, never fit, but when he plays well, gets praise. I thought he played really well on Saturday and has played well this season. So I don't think people hate British players. I think it's some of them need moving on. McCormack's Ricky Jr., says Klaus. I've just bought the Wharton Christmas calendar, says Robert McCormack. I'm hoping we can show you the Christmas jumper. This Christmas jumper design, like, we're getting to that time now where the Christmas jumper is going to come out. I'm telling you now, I've got all our Christmas jumpers. The design this year, the original was okay. It was on the right theme. And then I said, can we change this and this? Oh my God. It looks the bollocks. It's amazing this year. I can't wait to get mine. I'm going to wear it before Halloween. It's just amazing. Do you think, and we do ship them worldwide, so when they come out, get your orders in. Do you think Wharton and Anderson would work in our team, says S. Morgs, and if you had a choice, would you go to 4-3-3 with our current squad? Mate, FC26 is back, 4 o'clock on my channel, Man United Career Mode. I've not been playing for a couple of weeks because it's not felt great, but it's back today. I always play 4-3-3. That doesn't mean Amrim should change. He always plays 3-4-3. I would play 4-3-3. In relation to the midfield, Anderson and Wharton in Man United's midfield would make us way better, in my opinion. Way better. But I don't see us getting both. We might get neither. But 60% of you would take Wharton over Belieber. Stuart says, Ten Hag and co. should be done for war crimes just on those last two keeper acquisitions alone. Legitimately appalling decision making. See you in Strasbourg. Says Stuart M. Thank you very much. Okay, right. We'll wrap up there. Fantastic show this morning. As I always say, I actually love the international break because we don't have to follow results or previews or, you know, none of that stuff. We have proper conversations and it's the hardcore of the chat of the community. So I've really enjoyed this morning.
2 o'clock, obviously. I'm back with you at 8 o'clock. Now, unless something big breaks tonight, the Bruno show. I want to get it done right near the start of the international break. It's going to go off like a bottle of pop. The Bruno show tonight. The big conversation. Get everything ready for 8 o'clock. Positives, negatives. Let's do it. And it's the perfect time to do it because we've won a game of football and he played okay at the weekend. So it's the Bruno show tonight at 8 o'clock. Also, we'll be announcing the winner of the £800 Boohoo Man voucher. I've got that detail as well. Take care. Stay safe. Have a great day, everybody. Put a smile on your face. And I'll speak to you later on. Take care. If you want to watch Career Mode, about 4 o'clock today on my channel. I'll drop the link in the 2 o'clock show. Speak to you in a bit.